So for most of us, if we're relatively healthy, death seems like a distant thing. It's abstract. And that distance from death is part of what makes it so difficult to talk about.
I mean, you think about people going on to a new job or moving to a different part of the world. You're scared about that.
Yeah.
And you know what that's all about. You actually can vision and picture it. You can't picture what death is all about.
This is journalist Amanda Bennett.
We kind of push away death, and we've got a pretty much arm's-length relationship with it.
The story of Amanda's relationship to death and her idea for changing the way we ought to think about it actually starts with her late husband, Terrence. They'd been married for about 20 years when he passed away back in 2007. But before we get there, a little bit about their life before. And on the TED stage, Amanda described the moment they met. She was on a reporting assignment in China, and one night, she went to a party.
I sat down next to a stout middle-aged man with owl glasses and a bow tie. And he turned out to be a Fulbright scholar there in China, specifically to study Sino-Soviet relations. What a gift it was to the eager young foreign correspondent that I was then. I pump him for information. I'm mentally scribbling notes for the stories I planned to write. Talked to him for hours. Only months later, I discover who he really was. He was the China representative for the American Soybean Association. I don't understand. Soybeans? You told me you were a Fulbright scholar. Well, how long would you have talked to me if I told you you were in soybeans? I said, you jerk. Only jerk wasn't the word I used. I said, you could have gotten me fired. And he said, let's get married. Travel the world and have lots of kids. So we did.
And for a long time, things were great. Amanda and Terrence both had fulfilling careers. They had a son and then a daughter. And then about 13 years into their marriage, everything changed. One morning, Amanda was making breakfast. Their son was having a sleepover. And amidst the chaos of a bunch of boys running around the house, Amanda realized that Terrence was missing.
I finally found him. He was in the bed lying down. He was sort of doubled over in pain. And so we took him to the emergency room, and they were trying to figure out what was wrong with his intestines, his stomach. They realized it was kind of an acute colitis-type thing, a disease of the intestines. But in the course of doing that, they did some scans, and they came back to us and said, you know, after this is over, there's a kind of a shadow on his kidney. You might want to have it looked at. The shadow in his kidney turned out to be kidney cancer.
It was a rare and aggressive type of kidney cancer.
I looked it up, and there probably have been 50 cases documented in the world, and every one of them had died within a year. So that's our first end-of-life warning, is like, you're going to die in a year.
What did you do next?
This is the part that always seems both so incredibly human and natural and also deluded. I thought, I'm smart, I'm strong, I'm a journalist, I can find out things. I'm going to find out what it takes to keep him alive forever.
Coming up, what Amanda Bennett learned about life as she grappled with the possibility of Terrence's death. Today on the show, Rethinking the Narrative Around Death. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. And on the show today, ideas about the narrative around death, how we might start to change the way we think about it. And we're just hearing from journalist Amanda Bennett. When her husband, Terrence, was diagnosed with a rare form of kidney cancer, they made a decision. They were not going to let his disease interfere with their lives. Amanda says they weren't denying reality. They simply had hope. So shortly after his diagnosis, Terrence learned Arabic. He started a new job. He threw himself back into his life.
And for years, it seemed like we were succeeding. The surgeon emerged from the surgery. What did he say? He said what surgeons always say, we got it all. Then there was a setback when the pathologists looked at the kidney cancer closely, and yet He did not die. Mysteriously, he lived on. He coached Little League for our son. He built a playhouse for our daughter. And meanwhile, I'm burying myself in the internet looking for specialists. I'm looking for a cure. So a year goes by before the cancer, as cancers do, reappears. And with it comes another death sentence, this time 9 months. So we try another treatment, aggressive, nasty. It makes him so sick he has to quit it, yet still he lives on. Then another year goes by, 2 years go by, more specialists. We take the kids to Italy, we take the kids to Australia. And then more years pass, and the cancer begins to grow. This time there's new treatments on the horizon. They're exotic, they're experimental. They're going to attack the cancer in new ways. So he enters a clinical trial, and it works. The cancer begins to shrink. And for the third time, we've dodged death.
It went on like this for 7 years. Terrence would get sick, he'd get better again, until one night when his health finally took a turn for the worse.
A 20-something resident that I've never met before tells me that Terrence is dying, perhaps tonight. So what do I say when he says, "What do you want me to do?" There's another drug out there. It's newer. It's more powerful. He started it just 2 weeks ago. Perhaps there's still hope ahead. So what do I say? I say, keep him alive if you can. And Terrence died 6 days later. So we fought, we struggled, we triumphed. It was an exhilarating fight. And I'd repeat the fight today without a moment's hesitation. We fought together, we lived together. It turned what could have been 7 of the grimmest years of our life into 7 of the most glorious. We pushed the fight road over the edge, and I never got the chance to say to him, "Hey, buddy, it was a hell of a ride." We never got the chance to say goodbye. We never thought it was the end. We always had hope. So, what the experts call denial, I call hope. And I'd like to borrow a phrase from my friends in software design. You just redefine denial and hope, and it becomes a feature of being human. It's not a bug, it's a feature.
Was that hope that you guys had, did it help you through it?
Oh, I think it was critical because, as it turned out, there really wasn't a lot of effective treatment against kidney cancer. So really what happened to him just sort of happened. I mean, we may have helped extend his life a little, but not much with what we did. What was really important was, what was that 7 years going to be like? Were we going to live that 7 years in fear and looking around the corner for every second? And, you know, as I look back on those 7 years, those are some of the 7 best years of our lives. We were alive, we were excited, we traveled, our kids grew up. Those were good 7 years, and I think that hope and, you know, what people would call denial, it protected those 7 years for us, and I think that's worth a lot.
I mean, it's amazing that you guys carried on, I mean, knowing that at some point he'd be gone.
I mean, this is one of the reasons why I so hate the word denial, because people talk about, doctors in particular, hospitals, and even other people, talk about denial as if it's some failing.
Yeah.
And that all you really need to do is get over that failing, this delusional thinking. But think about the things that brought to us. Denial is also hope, and hope is what we all live on.
After his death, how long did it take you to kind of begin to see it as, or sort of reframe that experience, to sort of see it as is what it was, this incredible period of your life?
I think it was almost right away. You know, obviously, like with most people, it was extremely, extremely hard. But I felt at the end like we had both given it our best shot. And I think that the, you know, so-called, quote, denial helped me, because I wound up more than feeling sad that I lost him, I felt grateful that we had had such a good time together.
during Terrence's illness, giving up the fight, for that's how it felt like giving up, meant giving up not only his life, but also our story. Our story of us as fighters. The story of us as invincible. And for the doctors, the story of themselves as healers. So what do we need? Maybe we need a new story. We have a noble path to curing the disease, patients and doctors alike. But there doesn't seem to be a noble path to dying. Dying is seen as failing. And we had a heroic narrative for fighting together, but we didn't have a heroic narrative for letting go. So maybe we need a narrative for acknowledging the end and for saying goodbye. And maybe our new story will be about a hero's fight and a hero's goodbye.
This idea of a heroic narrative for death, how do we create that?
You know, the narrative that's out there is that you're fighting a disease, you're fighting cancer, you're beating something. And so there's the sense that you're this heroic person for fighting it off, but you're not heroic for losing. So that's where I feel like I could have gotten lost if I had felt that we had lost something. I think that we ran 100 miles an hour until we hit the end, and I think that's a heroic journey. And I think we've got to have some conversation that says, I've done everything well in my life. I'm now going to do this well, too.
Has it changed the way you think about your own death? Do you think that you probably fear it less than most people would?
No, I don't think so. I still think I've got the normal share of it. And as I say, it's a complicated feeling. And it's not so much that you're afraid of what comes next, but you're afraid of what you're going to leave behind.
Yeah. It's interesting because hearing your story, it seems like his experience taught you as much about living as it did about dying.
Well, no kidding. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, just one natural human thing in the way I lived my life was I was more focused in our lives with fixing what was bad. When in fact, it just completely flipped over to saying, you know what? That's not as important. There's this whole other side of it that's just wonderful and extraordinary. And I can live in that spot more. Instead of living in the shadow and trying to make the shadow better, I can live in the light and really expand that piece of it. And I really think I've stayed with that.
Amanda Bennett, she wrote a book about her experience. It's called The Cost of Hope. You can see her entire TED Talk at TED.com.